in for Handel today, healing from a back injury. Some of the stories we've been following, the governor unveiled plans to send direct cash payments to two-thirds of people in California under $100 billion plan to assist economic recovery. Households that earn up to $75,000 would be able to get $600 direct payments if they did not receive a payment in the first round of this year, and families with kids get an additional $500.
Remember, we told you about the Kentucky Derby winner, Medina Spirit, in trouble for essentially doping with that betamethasone, the drug prohibited on race day. Bob Baffert denied for 2 days that they gave this colt the ointment, the anti-inflammatory ointment, that he was never even treated with it, let alone given too much or given too much too soon to race day.
Wait a minute.
Now he says that he learned that Medina Spirit was administered the ointment that contained the drug. Apparently, after the Santa Anita Derby, he developed dermatitis on his hind end, and the veterinarian recommended this antifungal ointment called Otomax, and Bob Baffert just learned that in Otomax, there lies the betamethasone.
You're pretty much like a veterinarian right now.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor completely.
North Carolina has declared a state of emergency because of a lack of gasoline. Virginia to Florida, down to Alabama, there are gas stations that have sold out of gasoline, and they do not know when they're going to get more. This is all a result of that hack that shut down a petroleum pipeline from Texas up to the East Coast. It's not going to get better anytime soon.
Well, now we know that the vaccine can be used on adolescents ages 12 and up. And the question on the table becomes, will students be required to get the vaccine before returning to their classrooms in the fall? As you can imagine, this presents some legal issues that have actually been decided in the past in the courts.
It looks like it will have to be decided in the courts once again. LA Unified is one of those places that has said it will require students to get the COVID vaccine once it is approved. Remember, everything that we're using to this point is being used under an emergency use authorization. Everything. And that includes the deal yesterday that said that the Pfizer vaccine would be approved for kids 12 to 15. Those actually could start, shots could start within a few days once the committee that's advising the CDC makes a recommendation. That's technically expected tomorrow.
School vaccination requirements are established by states rather than the federal government, but you whip out the old Constitution and you find in the 10th Amendment that it does allow states to make these regulations protecting public health. The U.S. Supreme Court has supported this, has supported states' authority to make these decisions for quite a long time, going back to May of 1901. That's when we had a smallpox epidemic in Boston. That's where it began. And they put together the prevention measures, right? They would quarantine sick patients. The city began a free voluntary vaccination program. By December, this thing was not contained. So a local health commission there required all adults to be vaccinated under the authority granted by the state. One man disputed this, sued the state of Massachusetts. In 1905, his case made its way to the Supreme Court, and it upheld it. It said a state can require vaccination in the interest of public health.
Was it long after he died of smallpox? You know, the wheels of justice turn a little slow there, don't they? Now, there is some suggestion that vaccination requirements would be important enough that they would trump any claim that includes individual religious liberty. Others are a little bit more skeptical about that. Again, all of this is still being done under the emergency use authorizations. None of these drugs, none of these vaccines has received just sort of the blanket approval that's necessary to move forward with some of this. For example, just in the context of the military service members can be required to receive vaccines. But if there is something that has only emergency use authorization, and I'm looking at all the vaccines right now, they can opt out of a vaccine that's only being used under an EUA. Unless the president waives that provision, which in this case, the presidents that have been involved in this, COVID-19 have not waived that provision. That's why you've seen numbers of military members who refuse to get the vaccine.
It's going to be a question of individual choice versus public health. That's what it's going to come down to. Has our value of individual choice changed in 100 years? Is it more important for us to be more libertarian now and compared to when the smallpox was a deal?
I feel like the information that's available now is different than it was 120 years ago. And that type of decision, that personal liberty decision, is much more informed now than it was 120 years ago.
But it'll still come down to, does the government know better than you do, than your own research has informed you? And what is the government's responsibility when it comes to public health versus the responsibility of the country to ensure that you can make choices for yourself?
I feel like this is this inevitability of requiring kids to get this or requiring college students to get this is sort of that last stop in this adventure that we're on. Because remember, who stands to lose the most, I suppose, when it comes to a COVID-19 infection? Those people with those underlying health conditions that we've known of for a year, those older populations over the age of 60 or 65, and the vast majority of those people have already been vaccinated. We've seen numbers across the United States drop precipitously in the last several weeks. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't see another surge at some point in the fall and the winter, because this is a seasonal respiratory illness and that was when it will come back. My question about this is, even though colleges and universities, and we will see public and private K-12 schools require vaccines in some places, is this the thing that they need to be, the hill they need to die on? Because COVID, for the vast majority of kids under the age of 18, is a mere inconvenience. And if my parents are vaccinated, if grandma and grandpa have the vaccination, if cousin Sal with a heart murmur has been vaccinated, if all of these people have been protected, why would I sign up my child for a vaccine?
That hasn't been approved.
It hasn't been approved, but it also isn't a necessary thing.
I just think that this is going to be the hill a lot of people do die on, because it's hard to tell somebody what to do with their child. Especially when the government hasn't come out and said it's 100% above board. I will roll the dice with myself.
Sure.
But exactly. I would have a hard time vaccinating my kid if I knew that all the kid was going to have was a cough or some sniffles. Anyway, coming up next, it looks like NBC is pulled out of the Golden Globes because of a lack of diversity. Steve Gregory is well-versed
in diversity
in Hollywood Foreign Press Association matters, and he will join us when we come. Gary and Shannon, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app. Sitting in for Bill Handel, who's out with a back injury this week. U.S. employers posted a record number of available jobs last month, illustrating just how desperate businesses are to find new workers as the economy continues to expand post-pandemic. Yet everyone's just happy with their unemployment, so they're not lining up to take those jobs.
Yeah, how does it make sense? I wonder what it is. Oh, I know what it is. It's the fact that they're paying people to not work. That's not a good thing.
It's not good for any of us.
The confrontation between Israel and Hamas is escalating. Israel unleashed new airstrikes on Gaza today, killing a number of militants and civilians. Militants, at the same time, have been lobbing hundreds of rockets into southern Israel. Two Israelis have been killed. It's only going to get worse as they get closer to, I guess it is nightfall there, so it's going to get worse overnight.
NBC has billed the Golden Globe Awards as Hollywood's Party of the Year, but yesterday announced that party, for now, is over. Steve Gregory joins us. He has all the details when it comes to the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And Steve, what has been the reaction in Hollywood to this announcement?
Well, you know what? It was sort of a shock, but then the shock turned into bewilderment when Tom Cruise returned his three Golden Globes and in protest, in support of this. That sent shockwaves because Tom Cruise, as you might recall, doesn't have an Oscar. He doesn't have an Emmy. These are the only trophies he actually has in his industry. And he sent them all three back yesterday. So that's a pretty big sign that Hollywood is demanding change. And Scarlett Johansson came out, and she's encouraging everyone to step back and turn in their trophies as well. But this is going to have a huge impact on an organization, quite frankly, that is one of the most private, secret, most misunderstood organizations in Hollywood. It's the Hollywood Foreign Press Association with about 90 members. Now, you compare that to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, which oversees the Oscars, and they have close to 10,000 members. And these 90 members are supposed to represent various countries around the world. For many years, they wouldn't even list their membership on their website. And they just barely started doing that in the last few years. So it's a very private group. They announced last week that they were going to vote on a series of sweeping reforms, and that included bringing in more Black journalists. They don't have one Black journalist in the organization. Increased membership by 50% over the next 18 months. And apparently NBC, along with others, said this isn't fast enough, and they don't think it's genuine. Another part of the equation is that the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, its members, have been receiving free gifts from studios for years. And there's always been a problem with that conflict of interest because a studio, for instance, a bunch of reporters stayed in a very high-end hotel in Paris to promote Emily in Paris, and Emily in Paris ended up getting nominations. So there's a lot of quid pro quo, pay to play, that kind of stuff going on behind the scenes, and that's part of the reforms. But these individuals in NBC said not enough, and it's too not enough, not fast enough.
Sounds like this is the greatest club to belong to in Hollywood, and that finally somebody pulled the curtain back on it and realized that the emperor wasn't wearing any clothes.
Yeah, I mean, it was an LA Times investigation, really, that started this whole thing. And, you know, they're the ones that kind of dug deep in this and realized all the shenanigans going on. I mean, for years, I mean, let's face it, people have kind of laughed at the Golden Globes. Even the hosts at the Golden Globes laugh at the Golden Globes. I mean, when you think about how the awards are actually chosen, it's got to have the least equity of all the award shows. Even the People's Choice Awards, you know, it's the People's Choice Awards. You know, it's a popularity contest. The Oscars, well, that's done by each of the governors, each of the committees that are run by each of the board of governors. The SAG Awards are voted on by contemporaries, by your colleagues. They vote on the awards. Hollywood Press Association is 90 people from all over the world who basically, let's give this in. They gave us the best, they gave us the best seafood in Paris. So let's go that one. Their price checker was more exciting. So, but for some reason, Hollywood put a lot of stock in this award, and it's the award show that kicks off the award season. So now that's the next question, because there will not be an award show next year, and I can't imagine any network right now wanting to pick up something that's toxic.
Oh, so technically, NBC says they're not going to televise it, but will there be a ceremony next year?
That's unknown right now, but I can't imagine, and that's what people are saying, that people can't even imagine that they would go that far to have a ceremony, because who's going to show up to pick up a trophy?
That's true.
I mean, you've got Tom Cruise giving his back. So you think anyone's going to buck that trend and show up and actually pick it up? So there, I think it's pretty safe to say there will be no Golden Globes next year.
Steve Gregory,
in any way, shape, form.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the insights. You're always dialed in to Hollywood, so we appreciate that.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Coming back, a little feature that we like to call True Crime Tuesday.
We're bringing it into the show.
Yeah. There is the story of Son of Sam.
During the mid-70s, this was a guy that started trying to kill people with a knife. That didn't work, so he moved to a .44, and that began a lengthy crime spree throughout the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn. There's a new Netflix show about it that we're going to tackle on What You Watch on Wednesday tomorrow, so we thought we'd get you ready for that today.
Get the pump primed.
I was going to just say that.
For your Son of Sam knowledge.
Yeah.
Before you sit down and make your way through The Sons of Sam on Netflix.
Gary and Shannon in for Bill Handel, and Jennifer Jones Lee has the news.
Something's happening, don't speak too soon. I told the boss off and made my move. Got nowhere to go. Son of Sam, son of a shining.
Gary and Shannon here on the Bill Handel Show today. Handel's still out with his back injury. Mo Kelly comes along at 10 o'clock. Wayne Resnick at noon today.
Confrontation between Israel and Hamas, sparked by weeks of tensions in contested Jerusalem, is getting worse. Israel unleashed new airstrikes on Gaza today, killing a number of militants and civilians. Militants barraged southern Israel with hundreds of rockets, killing two Israelis. And the Israelis have sent in additional troops there on the border, which means that this is just going to escalate.
Told you, of course, about the ransomware attack on that fuel pipeline from Texas up to the New Jersey area, the East Coast, and that's causing gasoline shortages in several areas. There is a Russian ransomware syndicate that stole information from the police department in Washington, D.C. The syndicate that did the ransomware says that negotiations have broken down and that they will be releasing sensitive information that could put lives at risk if more money is not offered.
Caitlyn Jenner is distancing herself from the Republican Party, did an interview with CNN. And when Dana Bash asked her if she's a Republican or called her a Republican, she said, well, I'm kind of on the Republican side. She said, I don't like labels, you know, I'm me. OK, this is how I do it. She says, just because I have a conservative economic philosophy, and that's kind of the only thing that Republicans are kind of on that I'm on. But maybe call me a libertarian. Maybe you call me the middle.
Got to make sure everybody's got to have a label.
That's what she just said. She doesn't like labels.
Good. I'm glad. So I think that's a good step for her politically.
Well, what we do on our show, usually from 10 to 2 on Tuesdays, is True Crime Tuesday, where we kind of do a deep dive into a true crime story. And it just so happens that Netflix has a new show about Son of Sam, actually Sons of Sam. And it kind of focuses on a reporter's book from the late 80s called The Ultimate Evil. And we'll get into it coming up tomorrow for What You Watch in Wednesday. But we thought that we would do a deep dive into David Berkowitz. This was a guy whose reign of terror began in the mid-70s in the New York area.
He comes from a broken home, obviously. I guess he was given up for adoption. He was originally told that his birth mom died. And then it turns out that she was alive. He had to deal with all of this feeling of rejection and resentment and frustration with his upbringing. He joined the army, was honorably discharged. And when he moved back to New York and started working at a post office, that's when the killings all started.
It was during the mid-70s when he started to commit violent crimes. He screwed up his first attempt at murder. He was using a knife, so he switches to a handgun and starts terrorizing the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn. He went after young female victims, as they're wont to do, these serial killers. He liked white women with long, dark, wavy hair.
God. The events to which David Berkowitz is connected include about a dozen shootings. A couple in the Bronx in 76, a man and woman in Queens in 76. There were a couple shot in Queens also in 76 at the same time. Christine and John in Queens in 77, Manhattan 77, Bronx 77, Queens 77, Brooklyn 77. I mean, all of these right around that same time. And when they were happening in such with such repetition, just so quickly, clearly this was one of those times where people were terrified in New York.
He claimed that the motive for the killings was Sam, a demonic spirit that inhabited his neighbor's black lab.
Mm-hmm.
He's done several interviews from prisons. And he claimed in the 80s, I grieve for those who are wounded and for the family members of those who lost a loved one because of my selfish actions. I regret what I've done, and I'm haunted by it. He claimed that he was not ordered to kill by the neighbor's dog, nor was he part of a demonic cult, which was popular at the time.
Right. Everybody was going around being terrified that devil worshipers were sacrificing people and children and animals, etc.
He claimed instead that he felt like a soldier on a mission, that he believed Satan would release him from his emotional pain and loneliness if he killed. He also said he was not mentally ill. Well, you know what? You don't get to make that call, David.
Well, yeah, he said he wasn't taking medication, although I suppose the LSD that he was tripping balls on was not medication.
Tripping balls.
Or it was just his self-medication, perhaps, but it wasn't prescribed medicine.
Now, when he was asked a handful of years ago whether he was the sole shooter in each incident, he said he took responsibility for all the shootings, but he was pressed on it. When asked again if anyone else was involved, he said, let's just put it this way, there were demons. Why did this question come to light? Well, there was a reporter, an investigative reporter, Maury Terry. And this reporter believed that he was not the sole perpetrator of the killing spree in New York City. And that's what the show is all about.
Yeah, the book that Maury Terry put out was called The Ultimate Evil and attempts to connect. Remember the neighbor had a lab that was, I guess,
the demon dog,
whatever, that was telling him to do this. Well, the neighbor also had the neighbor's John and Michael Carr had a father named Sam.
They were the actual sons of Sam.
Here's part of the trailer for The Sons of Sam from Netflix.
Run from me, darling.
A killer on the loose in New York for a year and 3 days.
Run.
He is David Berkowitz, the man police believe to be the son of Sam.
You better run for your life.
They totally ignored the true story of this case.
Run.
Once they named Berkowitz, it was like, hallelujah, we got our bad guy. Everybody can walk the streets again.
All right, before you watch this 4-episode piece on Netflix, we're going to give you some ideas, some things to remember about the book, Maury Terry, the guy who put it together, and David Berkowitz.
Gary and Shannon in for Bill Handel. Today, True Crime Tuesday continues after Jennifer's news.
Got someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know?
Gary and Shannon in for Handel today, who is out with a back injury. Mo Kelly rolls along at 10.
North Carolina drivers are lining up at the gas pumps. I mean, it's just lines and lines of cars because of that major pipeline that was shut down after the cyber attack over the weekend. There are reports that some stations have run out of gas, the governor declaring a state of emergency, suspending fuel regulations so that the state's fuel supply stays normal.
Apparently, the average price of gas nationwide has reached a high after 5 days of this. It doesn't look like there's going to be any relief anytime soon, especially if you're in that portion of the country. This is going to be a rough several days before they get things worked out. We've been talking about this new Netflix documentary that's out called The Sons of Sam, all about David Berkowitz and the murders that he's accused of perpetrating back in the late 70s.
And the investigative reporter, Maury Terry, who maintains that Berkowitz was not the sole perpetrator of the killing spree, wrote a book about it in the late 80s called The Ultimate Evil. And he tried to connect Berkowitz's crimes to other occult-linked killings elsewhere in the United States as well, and proved that the murders that Berkowitz carried out, they required accomplices, namely Berkowitz's neighbors, John and Michael Carr.
And these guys, their father's name was Sam, so they were arguably the actual sons of Sam. Now, there's a couple other things they said that Maury Terry, again, this journalist, the book that this is based on, points to small details that would link Berkowitz to a crime scene from North Dakota. And even to Charles Manson, of course, popular from the late 60s from here in California. But there's a bunch of other stuff that goes into the Berkowitz story, just David Berkowitz himself, that is not in the Sons of Sam documentary. For example, they talk about his childhood or they don't talk about his childhood. These things that could have potentially been what led Berkowitz to become a serial killer. For example, they didn't get into the trauma that he suffered as a kid. I mentioned before that he was raised by foster parents. Well, what happened was he learned at 4 or 5 years old that he was adopted, that his mom died during childbirth. And even he has said in interviews that the feelings of rejection and guilt and misinformation opened the door for demonic control.
Okay, whatever. I've heard enough about the sad childhood in courtrooms. Yeah, you're raised by your foster parents, so, you know, it was traumatic, and I went on, that's why I killed a bunch of people.
Right. How many millions of people are raised by foster parents and don't
break. But the whole thing about the neighbors I found fascinating. Both of the brothers, John and Michael, remember they had the dog that he originally said was possessed by demons that compelled him to kill. The author did not believe that the association ended with the dog or the hallucinations with regard to the dog. Interestingly, both brothers died prematurely in the years following his eventual arrest in 1977. And when he was arrested, by the way, there's a story that the detective who arrested him heard him say, "What took you so long?"
Right. Never happened.
But just months after he was detained, John was shot in the head in North Dakota. His body was found at his girlfriend's apartment. She first told police that he committed suicide, but then claimed he was murdered in relation to the Son of Sam investigation. Michael Carr, the other brother, died in a car accident in Manhattan about a year and a half after the death of his brother. We're never going to get any answers as to what their potential involvement would have been. Again, he's been questioned about this several times, and he's been pretty vague about whether he had accomplices or not. But with both of them being dead now, why not come out if they helped him with it?
Well, unless there was yet another person who was involved that may have been responsible for their deaths,
right.
The brother's deaths.
Right. I'm interested to watch this show today or tonight because I want to see what evidence this reporter has to support the fact that these murders required accomplices.
Again, this investigative journalist named Maury Terry wrote a book about David Berkowitz that Netflix then turned into this 4-part documentary called The Sons of Sam. One of the criticisms of it is that Maury Terry became obsessed with the Son of Sam case, and that may have negatively affected his journalistic integrity in terms of putting the book together. Because in the book, David Berkowitz recalls his friend, Maury Terry, who helped connect him with the mother of a victim named Stacy Moskowitz. And if indeed the men were tight over the course of the years, you got to figure out how much was David Berkowitz able to influence Maury Terry when he wrote the book in terms of maybe trying to throw him off the scent.
All right, Mo Kelly in coming up next for us. We will see you manana, sitting in for Bill Handel this week, out with a back injury. Do it all again.
Stay dry, everybody.
Blessings.